Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into another Behind the Bets podcast. We're taping this Wednesday, October 16th. I am Doug Kazarian. We will have a little bit of a twist today. No John Murray. And I want to say he's celebrating still the Nationals victory last night. Maybe not up able to get up this early, but it is not the case. It is G2E conference out in Vegas. Very busy. You know, he's a suit now, executive director. So he is busy.
Mr.
Executive Director, Travis. So we're going to change things up. We're going to have Preston Johnson on. You see him a lot on ESPN. Read his stuff, obviously, all throughout ESPN.com. We're going to talk college football with him and also basketball. NBA season starts in less than a week. You ready, my man?
I'm usually not a big NBA person, but because of the shakeup and all the moves, I'm ready for this season because I don't have a team, so I can just enjoy everything.
Yeah, no, parity is sort of the name of the game. I'm going to talk about it with Preston. Just we haven't seen sort of this competitive balance, at least in the top tier, in a long, long time. So we'll get into all that. We have some season win totals, some like division odds plays, some prop plays. Preston has one with Ben Simmons that's entertaining, but he thinks it's a really, really good strong
play.
Makes
a three-pointer?
His over-under. Like under 17, I think, is the number. So Preston's going to get into all that. I have some plays as well. We'll just talk generic NBA stuff as well, sort of kind of put in your back pocket as you enter the season, which starts Tuesday night for those that aren't plugged in. But we're also going to dive deep into the college football. We have some plays here. And then Murray will be back tomorrow for NFL. And I'll pick his brain to get some college plays as well. But we will have the regular NFL Thursday pod. But are you worried about a little upset with Ohio State on Friday at all?
Well, I mean, with us potentially being on the Fox Business Channel, I think I'm less worried. Or should I be more because no one's going to be paying attention to it? It's the first time returning since the infamous Musburger game. So
yes.
A little, but
no, you'll be fine. I actually was hoping the line would be like 22-ish. It's too high for me to – I was right at hand. Northwestern's garbage.
Yeah.
But by their standards, they're usually like a fringe bowl team kind of thing. They're just not that good this year. And I've said that about Michigan State as well. They're just subpar by their.
And coming off a bye week, I'm good.
Yeah, I think they'll take care of it. Maybe first half play for me. We shall see. But let's get into it with Preston.
Sounds to me like you guys a couple of bookies.
Well, that's the plan here on the Behind the Bets podcast as we bring in Preston Johnson. Been on the podcast a while, not this college football season yet. So good to have you on, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to talk it through.
All right, obviously we discuss a lot of things on Daily Wager, and you and I both contribute on ESPN.com's chalk section with our plays. So we're going to talk about the college football card, and then also in the second half of things, also do some NBA as the season gets going next week. And Preston, I think you know the drill. Part of the method of the madness is talking out my plays here on the podcast. It's sort of.
All right.
So you have a heavy burden. I hope it's a challenge if you choose to accept it.
I do.
Okay. Well, let's get through it because our plays are due this afternoon, and obviously not all the guys who have come on the pod are in that same boat, but you are, which is fun. So I guess plays you've already made or plays you're thinking about making, and I will do mine as well. I'll just let you go first on the tee box, and you know the conversation will go from there.
Sure. I'll just go in rotation order. 318, Virginia, you can get 3.5s out there, even some 3s actually in Las Vegas. I don't really grasp the line. You know, at 3, it's basically implying that these teams are more or less equals on a neutral field. I just disagree. You go back to the Notre Dame game. You know, I have this closer to lines, closer to 7. So I'd even bet some 4 and 3.5, and you know the 4s are completely gone. So I was apparently wrong there. But the Notre Dame game, Virginia, you know, they gained a similar amount of yardage as Notre Dame. They were winning the game outright at halftime, but Bryce Perkins had 2 fumble 6s in that second half. I think one of them ended up setting Notre Dame up at like the 4-yard line. It ended up being a touchdown. One actually was a fumble 6, and then he had 5 total turnovers. And they only lost the game by 15. They had another turnover on downs in Notre Dame's against that 30. I mean, they outplayed them, in my opinion. Miami was very similar. Miami scored on the opening drive. Virginia outgained them by 100 yards. Like at one point, Miami had 118 yards, like in the middle of the fourth quarter. I mean, Virginia actually had cut it. They just kept kicking field goals. They missed some field goals. They had one blocked. They kept turning it over, very similar to Notre Dame. Now, the counter is, hey, they're just going to be doing the same stuff to Duke. If they're turning it over, they're probably not going to win the game. stretch there. But I think going home kind of rejuvenated now, where they honestly, if they're going to contend here in the Coastal after having lost to Miami, they're going to have one loss. Miami will have the tiebreaker, but Miami has two losses in the conference play already to North Carolina and Virginia Tech. I mean, this is essentially a must-win town now for Virginia going forward. And I trust Bronkelman and all and to get them prepared and at home. Again, my number seven, I don't understand why you can get threes out there, even 3.5. I think a good bet.
Wow, so you're number seven. That's interesting. But, yeah, it's an intriguing game. Like you said, the division, the coaching matchup, because I feel like both coaches are bet on. But that Friday night game, Virginia, like we saw coming a mile away. I actually put it in a teaser. As much as I thought Virginia was going to win, I was like, this game has just trickiness written all over. Because yeah. Miami had gotten so undressed the previous game against Virginia Tech. And I was just expecting a strong start. But this Hurricanes team, and I actually kind of like Georgia Tech this week. I just don't think they're very good. They're incredibly inconsistent. So it's just a weird game. And Virginia sort of plays down to their opponents at times and up to their opponents. You know, we talk about that cliche a lot in basketball. But I feel like that is the case with Virginia. You know, I just feel like they're a weird team. And I think it comes down to Perkins' passing ability, because I think he's a great runner. But he just has some horrible short hop throws. All right, for my first play, I'm going to go to the ACC as well. And this is a game I really like. It's actually, ironically, it's a team I was on for a season win total under. But they've really impressed me, and I've got off it. And that's North Carolina. Laying 3.5 at Virginia Tech. 3-20 at a couple places as well. Don't be fooled by the Hokies 4-2 record. They have one win against a Power 5 school. That was Miami. And they just caught them in a good spot. They were off that beat down at home to Duke, had extra rest, and went and had a nice showing. Started out 28-0 to the U. But the other three wins were Old Dominion, Furman, and Rhode Island. Trailed to Furman at halftime. Only led URI by 3 points in the second half a week ago. I just don't think they're very good. We saw how bad they could be at home when they lost to Duke. I think North Carolina is sort of a strong team, not a great team. And I think what they showed against Clemson, that near upset, was impressive. And I think off a bye, it's a great spot to back North Carolina here.
So my number is right at 3. It's interesting, though, because I didn't know what to do with Virginia Tech after that Duke game. And, you know, I actually thought I was buying low on Virginia Tech laying 2.5 at home against Duke. And then they just got absolutely blasted after, I think they actually went up 7-0, too, to start the game. So I was completely just enamored with how bad the state of Virginia Tech program was. I stayed completely away from the Miami game. And then, as we know, they went outright as a double, I guess it was 14-point underdog. My number, so I haven't really maneuvered Virginia Tech as much as potentially I should, but my number is right at 3 anyways. So the reason I kind of side with you, though, despite it being 3.5, is that I am definitely open to being wrong on Virginia Tech by like 3 points to a point spread. Like, absolutely could be that this should be 5 or 6, and I couldn't disagree with anybody that said that's where they have the number. So, Virginia Tech's just at a point where it's bet against them or pass for me. I'm not betting the game, but I think it's fine if you like North Carolina at 3.5.
When you have on your model, like freshman quarterback, like this situation with Sam Howell, how much do you adjust for just experience and improvement given we're midway through the season and, you know, it's not September anymore?
I mean, I don't adjust for – there's no, like, experience variable in what I'm doing for projections. There's, you know, the data and his numbers to this point in the season, which are incorporated and weighed in to an extent. But, there's no real factor that's like, hey, he's played in whatever it is, 6 games now, and so he gets a bump up. He gets a bump up if he's doing well, and, you know, he gets knocked down if he's doing poorly. And he's done pretty well, all things considered, for a freshman. And he's actually done a lot better in second halves, fourth quarter. So that is one thing I've just noted in general is outside of, I think, one game, North Carolina was down at halftime, coming back and making big runs in the second half. Like that South Carolina game to open the year is an example. They were down huge, ended up winning that game outright. They've come from behind a few times. So that's just one kind of note I made subjectively. But overall, yeah, it's not an experience factor that really changes much.
Yeah, I was annoyed this number came up. I think I might be banking this on Daily Wager tonight. So file that one away.
Good luck.
I like this Carolina team. I think what, you know, I talked about it last year. I was on a lot of interviews about Herm Edwards and a colleague here at ESPN, and everyone was like, the game's passing by. I'm like, what makes you so confident in that? And I thought Mac would do a nice job in the long run, but I thought, like, turning things around real quickly was just not going to happen. I thought he's done a great job. And they got playmakers, and Virginia Tech is really shaky. So I'm going to take the Tar
Heels. Let me put you on the spot real quick. I'm going to put you on the spot. Who would you say is your coach of the year to this point in the season? I was tweeting about this yesterday.
I mean, that is such a interpretation kind of thing, right? Because you factor in expectations and stuff. I mean, you want to say Orgeron, but how much of that is on the coordinators?
Right, Joe Brady.
You could say Ryan Day, but you can also say, like, Whiskey as well. So, like, who's surpassed expectations the most?
I thought it was Satterfield at Louisville. Like, they were just such a disaster last year.
He'll never get it for, like, a 5-win season or whatever, but you're right.
Yeah.
Like, what he's
done.
I think
it might be him.
Matt Rhule. Like, what about Matt Rhule? I mean, what they've done is incredible. Yep. But that's more of, like, a three-year, like, coach of the last 3 years, just turning around that program where they were.
The reason I asked that, I think Matt Brown is probably in the top 10. You could argue that just because I think they have absolutely outperformed expectations.
For sure. And like I said, I was on their season win total under. And sometimes you just got to take it on the chin. PJ Fleck, we're going to learn a lot about this Minnesota team in the next couple of weeks. But as lucky as some of their wins are, they're still undefeated. And, you know, who knows what happens when they host Penn State in a couple of weeks. Could they be undefeated then? Maybe. Probably. They have Rutgers and Maryland next.
Yeah, they should be Rutgers.
they're not up for Coach of the Year at Rutgers. All right. What's your next play?
Let's go to 390 on the board. Oklahoma State -3.5. This is one that I did bank yesterday on daily wager. I think there's no more threes. I did looked at the screen. There's no more threes, but 3.5s are a great bet still. So my projection 6.7 again, number I have closer to 7. And you know, I'm looking at the discrepancy here in the market, and it really jumps out because Baylor, they're undefeated, but they played a top. They played a schedule that ranked outside the top 100, so a soft schedule. Last week, they went to double overtime at home against Texas Tech, who people look at like, okay, they ended up beating them. But, Texas Tech beat Oklahoma State 2 weeks ago, and Oklahoma State's coming off of a bye since that loss. But in that game, Oklahoma State went down, I believe, 21-0, or it was like 24-3. They were down 21. But they turned it over 5 times. They almost roared all the way back. They had a chance in the fourth quarter potentially to win it. They ended up losing that game. So you look at them, they're 4-2, Baylor's 6-0. Their other loss, meaning the Cowboys, was against Texas on the road in Austin. They were going back and forth there and almost had a chance to win that game. So they've been in the mix. I think they're by far a better team than Baylor is. And more importantly, Baylor's middle linebacker towards ACL, Clay Johnston, he's out for the season. He is their captain. They've already talked about how big of a loss it's going to be. And then specifically against a quarterback like Spencer Sanders, who has a dual threat ability, read option with all the weapons that this offense has for Oklahoma State, I don't think Baylor's going to be able to hang, in my personal opinion. The number's too low anyway. So I like Oklahoma State quite a bit as one of my favorite plays this week.
I'm with you, man. I know I don't want to say knocked Okie State earlier this year, but I had Texas against him, and I just think, like, they were a little raw. Like, they went like a full quarter without scoring after putting 20. You know, they just had some inconsistency that bothered me, but I think they've gotten a little better. Obviously, with a freshman quarterback, that's going to happen. But this is they're better. I mean, it's just, this is a good situation to back the Pokes. I understand where you're going with this. I'm glad you got the 3, and it's up to 3.5 here. This is a good, really good spot for the Pokes off a bye, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, no, I like that. All right, more from Preston in a moment, but I want to tell you about Dollar Shave Club. I cannot stress enough the quality of their products. They spent years developing, crafting, refining everything. They have everything I use to look, feel, and smell my best. You name it, they have it, I use it. And as amazing as their shave stuff is, Dollar Shave Club is way more than just razors. Dollar Shave Club has you covered head to toe. They have everything you need to shower, shave, style your hair, brush your teeth, and more. And Dollar Shave Club can keep you automatically stocked up on the products you use. You get what you want whenever you need it, whether that's once a month or a few times a year. I never have to waste time at a store wondering what I'm getting is any good. As a Dollar Shave Club member, I know what I'm getting is the highest quality. And right now, you can put the quality of Dollar Shave Club's products to the test. Their Ultimate Shave Starter Set has basically everything you need for an amazing shave. The Executive Razor, the Shave Butter, Prep Scrub, and Post Shave Do. The best part is you can try it for just $5. After that, the restock box ships regular size products at regular prices. Get your ultimate starter set for just $5 at dollarshaveclub.com/bets. That's dollarshaveclub.com/bets. In your model, how much do you adjust for a team off a bye? Is it always a good thing?
Yeah, it's generally a positive thing. I'm trying to now, better that you asked it that way, I'm trying to think if there's a time a bye is negative and I was subtracting points. I don't think so.
Well, if a team is rolling sometimes, if it's too early in the season, I would say that from like my...
Yeah, the actual week of the season does vary slightly, but all within like 0.2 of a point or something. So it's generally going to be around 1 point on average.
Gotcha.
In this case, I believe it was a little bit higher, probably because Baylor just played a bunch of extra plays and snaps in a double overtime game. So it's a little bit higher weighted. And that's why, you know, my number is like 6.7 instead of maybe 5.5. But regardless, yeah, there's going to be an edge on Oklahoma State, I think, either way.
Interesting. And just a sport so physical like that, it makes perfect sense that it's, you know, almost always a benefit. Well, it wouldn't be a college football week if we didn't have an Alabama game and a team total. But this is interesting because I feel like it's low. So Bama, you know, historically, and we're talking historically like meaning in the Nick Saban era, defense has been so synonymous. But this defense is not as strong as in years past. They obviously have the freshman linebackers to start the season. They're losing both inside linebackers in August to injury. And we've seen teams put up some points on them. And that also means Tua stays in for an extra possession or two compared to last year. And that's why you're seeing so many overs hit with the Tide. And they're three SEC games, so like they're three toughest opponents. The opponents are scoring over 27 points per game. Now, South Carolina, Mississippi, and A&M, I think, are better than Tennessee, especially if Tennessee doesn't have their freshman quarterback who actually played well. So take it with a grain of salt. But and then Jeremy Pruitt, the coach of the Vols, was joking that he's just not going to punt to Alabama with Tua and those three receivers. He's going to go for it. I think he was kidding, but he was also suggesting they're going to take more chances, maybe on fourth down, trick plays. But I think 62 feels like a low number with Alabama, and I even like the team total over 48 as well.
So you mentioned that – so the freshman, his name's Maurer. I think Brian Maurer. He said he's out. I know he got injured last week and came out of the game, but is he out officially then?
No, he's not officially anything.
Okay.
And I trust him. I would trust this play a lot more if he were healthy and fine.
So he's one of the things that I absolutely hate is when a team's going back and forth between quarterbacks, which I happened to at the Ole Miss game inexplicably against Missouri last week. And I mean, if they're going to be trotting out guys, as Guanantino, I believe, is the other quarterback's name from Tennessee, they just can't get rid of them. So, I mean, that would be, I guess, my worry about an overplay for the entire game is if Tennessee is just unable to move the ball, or they try a freshman in the first series, he doesn't score on Alabama, which is likely. And then the coach is like, oh, well, we didn't score against Alabama. Let's try the other guy. And then he doesn't. So they go back to the freshman. Neither of them get in rhythm. If I was to do anything, I would probably just look at the Alabama team total side then, if that's the route you were looking. I will say my projection with Maurer is higher, so it would be nice to know if he was at least starting. My total number with him is 63.2. My total number without him is 60.4. So he's almost a 3-point, I think, improvement to the total overall, just because the offensive numbers with him for Tennessee have been a lot stronger. I'm a limited sample this season, but at least enough that I think it's worth, 2.8 points. So hopefully he's the guy when it's all said and done.
Yeah, and it's hard to get a read on this Tennessee team, which was just putrid, right? They started out 1-4 with their lone win coming against Tennessee Chattanooga, and that included losses to BYU and Georgia State.
Yeah,
but that Georgia game, they kind of looked competent. It was a bad beat if you had the plus points. But Georgia, we talked about, and, you know, I was on South Carolina last week. It just kind of looked, I don't know, I don't want to say average, but just kind of going through the motions. They had the talent, but it's just they haven't been there. So it's just tough to get a read. So I think team total is probably the right side because Bama can just score. They can score at will. And
I'll mention one more thing. So Maurer against Mississippi State this last week, the reason he was pulled, they tried to say maybe it was injury related, I think, later. But I mean, they won the game outright anyway as a 7-point underdog. I think it got bet all the way down to like 4.5, 5. But in the first quarter, beginning of the second quarter, they had two drives. He threw end zone interceptions. So they would march it down in Mississippi State. He'd throw an end zone interception. Now they were still winning the game, but that's why they swapped quarterbacks. And so that's why I think he is healthy and he is going to play. But they moved the ball like if you throw out, because what we're trying to do is like kind of account for some of the luck factors when we're analyzing games after the fact. And yes, interceptions aren't completely luck, but they are a little bit fluky. And obviously that's a freshman mistake that he can try to correct, but they move the ball so much better now through that Georgia game. I guess the really good Georgia defense, they were moving the ball a lot better than, you know, Guantanamo was. So I just wanted to bring that up, that in that Mississippi State game, he was pulled, but it was because of two end zone interceptions, but they moved the ball on each of those drives. It was something like 57 yards and then 68 yards on each drive. And then after that, they weren't able to move the ball nearly as well with the backup, well, former starter, which is the guy that lost to Georgia State, lost to BYU. So, yeah, Mar's the guy. I kind of actually, the more I'm thinking about it, I think there's a lot of upside to what they could potentially do, to, especially like an Alabama defense in the second half playing prevent or whatever.
Well, that's the thing. Alabama has vulnerability, and they've given up all those points, and it's not just garbage time. Now, again, those were better opponents, but Alabama's also put up 47 in five straight games, and the only game they didn't this season was the opener, but their two starting running backs were, you know, disciplined for the entire first half, I want to say, and then they put up 28 after halftime. So the offense has just been humming all year, and it's not like Tennessee's that good defensively. Obviously, they're better than some of the games opponents Alabama's faced, but it just feels like a really low. Now, the question is, when you decipher team total or the regular total, you're basically saying, well, is Tennessee likely to cover that? If you're taking the game total over, then you think Tennessee's going to cover, because if not, you just take the team total over. So the question is, do I feel more comfortable with, you know, is it like, okay, so Alabama's team total is 48. So am I more confident in a 47, like, 17 game or a 51-10 game? Like, because that's what you have to decide.
That you do need to decide. Yeah, I'm not sure I have the answer either. I think the number's slightly high. I'm like 32.9. So, like, it's maybe the Tennessee side, especially if Mara goes, it's a slight difference there, too. But, right. Yeah, it's going to come down to probably a fourth quarter sweat of if Tennessee can get like one more touchdown on the board.
Well, and then Alabama has those empty possessions where they drive for like 6 minutes and then miss a chip shot field goal, and you're like,
yeah, they always miss.
It's so frustrating, and then they just kind of bleed clock. And I know it's at home, and it's a former assistant. I mean, they have these like kind of narratives, so maybe it's a first half over. We got to look into that. So that's where I'm kind of thinking. Again, I told you, you had a very important responsibility to talk things out.
We talked that one through. So I have one more that I've bet for sure already as far as sides go. And I have one more I'm thinking about that I want to ask your thoughts on.
Okay.
I'm going to go with the one that I have bet, and that's SMU. I took it at 7, but it's 7.5 now across the board. I still think it's an okay bet. I would bet about 75% of what your like median bet size would be at 7.5. If you can get 7, like minus 120 or better, then you know I'd probably up that up to about your normal bet size. But this is just from a market perspective, really interesting. Just in general, the home fields for me aren't exactly 3 points. But if you were to flip this and SMU was on the road against Temple, this implies the line would be about 1.5. And just last week, I mean, we bet Temple +6 at home to Memphis. It moved down to 3.5. So the closing line was Memphis -3.5 at Temple. At this point in the season, I have SMU rated a point better than Memphis. So SMU, this line implies that they're 1.5 on the road against Temple, and Memphis closed 3.5 and at one point was as high as -6 on the road at Temple. So there's a little bit of a discrepancy there in the market. You look at the game, well, Temple won outright, which is true, thankfully, because I needed that. But Memphis turned it over, I believe, 5 times in that game. And I think it was a fortunate, at least money line win. There's a good portion of the time Memphis, I think they lost by 2, wins the game by 5. If one of their turnovers doesn't happen, then they get a touchdown. So I think Memphis played better than expected against Temple. The turnovers kind of swung the final score. It was a little bit of fraudulent final score. Even though I was on the Temple side, I'll admit, I think Memphis wound up being the better team in that game. So now SMU is coming off of that game where they had the 21 points in a row in the fourth quarter to force overtime against Tulsa, their worst game they played of the season. And they get a bye week now to get over that and prep for Temple at home. This number should be like double digits. If you're going off of what happened last week and the closing line with Memphis at Temple was 3.5, SMU should be, like, in my opinion, on the road, more like 5. And so that means at home they should be like 10.5, 11. I just don't understand this line. So I think even at 7.5, it's an okay bet. I think they take care of business. Temple had some vulnerabilities in the passing game, especially. They've done good against the run. They can stop the run, which Memphis didn't run very well. They did good against Maryland's run game back earlier this season when they upset Maryland at home. Granted, Maryland's not as good as we anticipated at that time. But SMU, I mean, Shane Michel, Sonny Dykes, they're just going to, I think they're going to throw all over Temple. And if they don't turn it over five times like Memphis did, then they should be in good shape. So I like that.
You alluded to the home field three-point thing. Is that still a thing? Like, because of the key numbers and everything?
I think if I, like, averaged out all my home fields in college football, it'd be a little bit higher. I was just doing that for the sake of making the math a little easier. And either of these schools, like Temple and SMU, have, like, a 4 or 5 point home field advantage. So, yeah, I think it was fair to just use three. The one thing I think that's the misconception is in the NFL, like, there isn't any team that gets 3 points at home in the NFL. Like, they're all, like two on average, maybe even a little lower now. Right. That's the one thing where people say, oh, like, this team's favored by three at home. It implies they're a pick 'em on a neutral. It's never the case anymore, in my opinion.
I have another play, but I'm curious which – okay, so a play I don't need to talk out. The play I'm on, and I'm going to – it's either going to be Carolina or this one for my bank today and the other one tomorrow. USC minus 10 now against Arizona. There's still some 9.5s. This Wildcats team is pretty erratic, mostly because Khalil Tate is very Jekyll and Hyde, but for the most part, he's been negative in, like, key situations. We saw it second half last week. They were outscored 38-10. And turnovers, and just, I just think it's a great spot for USC off tough back-to-back road losses, Notre Dame and also Washington. I think they kind of get right and open up a can on this Arizona defense.
So my projection is exactly minus 9.0. So I have not bet the game. I had USC last week against Notre Dame, so I don't dislike USC. I thought that line was a little too extreme when it was 11, 10.5. I will say, we watched the game and we were actually discussing the game while it happened, this Arizona-Washington game on Saturday night late. It was one of the weirder games I've watched this season, and most people probably didn't watch it because it was so late. But Arizona, if I believe, they were winning by 4 at halftime. And the 4 that they were winning by was way too low because they had given up, I think it was 17-13, and of Washington's 13 points, 10 of them were off of Khalil Tate fumbles, or maybe one was a Khalil Tate fumble 6, and the other was a muffed punt on, like, the 6-yard line or something. So they essentially gift-wrapped 10 of the Washington points. So Washington's sitting at 13. Arizona's up by 4, and you can easily say, hey, like, Arizona's defense against Washington, like, and Washington's been struggling anyways this season. Like, that Stanford game, they did not look very good. You see that first half. Washington had 3 points on offense. And then all of a sudden in the second half, they just dropped like a 40 ball, like nothing. And I don't know what happened. I still don't understand. I'd have to like go back and watch it. But there were no turnovers in the second half that really set them up. All of a sudden their offense was just flowing and Arizona fell apart. And I don't know. I don't get it. It was a very, very strange game. So I don't know which Arizona to believe. The one that hadn't lost since Hawaii and had been playing pretty well through the first half of Washington, or that second half here. So I'd be worried that you're kind of a little bit recency biased in the sense that you remember that second half that Arizona played, which was just abominable. Everything else that they had played since the Hawaii game, they were really strong. And I'm not sure, you know, is Clay Helton covered? What's his cover percentage as a favorite? You know, like he hasn't been covering either dog or favorite. I don't know, stuff the way double digits with USC. That's a pass for me. But the Arizona game was very, very strange Saturday night.
You think this will be the best opponent they've played all year? I guess Washington, outside of Washington.
Yeah, it's Washington, but then this is the second best for sure. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's my thing. I think they're kind of like weak. They're weak-minded, and I think they have a shaky coach. So I think when the going gets tough,
I can agree with you there.
So I think they're kind of a – fragile's the wrong word. I think that, like, is pressure. I just think they're kind of weak, and they're not, like, mentally tough. Not that USC is the blueprint, but I think this Trojans team has really showed me something. Even that loss at USC where they did not cover, they showed me a lot, and they just didn't convert in fourth down situations and goal to goal when they were down 2 touchdowns. And I feel like USC is just ripe for an offensive explosion.
To get there, Slovis is a lot better. He had a game under his belt, a half under his belt, then he woke up against the Irish on the road. So he could be on the right side. Let me ask you about this game. And
I should say the numbers come down a little bit. So now it is 9.5 9s in the market. So that's encouraging.
Oh, there you go. Yes. Especially if you can get under 10, that's going to be a much better bet. Right. So Florida, South Carolina. I have a bet that I want to make. And I first want to hear your thoughts about the Florida LSU game. Like, what are your initial, what's your initial reaction to that game, just as an overall outlook?
Well, I actually think I hit the nail on the head. I said I wouldn't be surprised if Florida has a lead in the second half, which they did.
You did.
And I expected them to run out of gas, which they did. And I walked away probably more impressed with Florida than I was with LSU. Now, I'd already set the bar pretty high for the Tigers, but I was pretty impressed with Florida the last 2 weeks particularly, but also in that loss. I mean, that was a tough ask for Trask and the Gators off the Auburn win, which was impressive in and of itself. So I was pleasantly surprised by Florida, a team that I've, I don't know, dismissed over the years a little bit and kind of laughed at because of offensive ineptitude, and I was pretty impressed with their ability to hang in there and almost win.
So this is where I'm at. Give me like 90 seconds on this. So everyone's saying that about Florida. I came out so impressed in that game. And I already knew just from watching the game, and I'm used to looking over these box scores and trying to get, you know, expected scores, that how this game really played out. And, you know, LSU, I, based on numbers, I had this like a 20-point win. And, you know, they only ended up winning by 14, and it could have been 7. Florida had those shots at the end right at the goal line. But Florida, and I was complaining about it because I had laid LSU early in the week, but, I mean, they were converting every third down all game. And you look, and they ran like nearly twice as many plays as LSU did. But you look, LSU, think about this. They gained nearly 11 yards per play against the Florida defense. And Florida hadn't really seen anybody very good offensively. And that was my thing, is everyone was hyping up, well, LSU hasn't seen a great defense yet. Florida saw Bo Nix. Like, that was it. Like, they had not played anybody very good, especially at the quarterback position. So they played Miami, who we see now is just atrocious at the quarterback position, where we were impressed in that opening week one weeknight game that Florida played well in, because they sacked them 9 or 10 times. I didn't understand that side of it. So I thought there was, that could go two ways. And then sure enough here, LSU, like 10.8 yards per play. Florida was very good defensively. Okay, so now I'm looking, well, why is it that they were able to convert 80% of their third downs? Because that was why they were able to continue drives, end up scoring so many times. Because if they go 3 and out on any of those, punting to LSU, LSU was moving it at will. LSU would have won by 28. Instead, it's 14 and almost 7 at the end. Well, I came across this right before the games last week. You probably don't know Ken Zampis, I believe is how you say his name. He's like the quarterback's coach over there at Florida. So get this. This is like one of the coolest little tidbits or stories. They're calling him like a quarterback whisperer, and that he's one of the reasons that Trask, who took over for Franks, who got injured for the season, has done so good. He was with the Browns last year coaching up Baker Mayfield, who was good last year and is no longer good. Before he went to the Browns, he was in the Bengals organization with Andy Dalton, who actually used to be pretty good and is no longer good. And now Zampis is doing these things with Trask in Florida. That so I went from trying to like disregard what happened in that Florida LSU game to maybe buying in on them. And now they're going up against the South Carolina team off that massive Georgia upset. They're only laying 5 points on the road against a South Carolina team. By the way, Sam Linsky, the quarterback, I believe that's his name. Is Ryan, totally banged Ryan. Up. He's probable, but he may not even play. And if he does, he's not 100%. I think Florida might actually just run away with this game. So I was curious. I haven't bet it yet, and it's been coming down kind of from 6 to 5.5, 5 now. I've been winning it up, but I think I'll end up being on the Gators.
I wouldn't blame you on any of these. I just think it's a tough spot for both teams. Obviously, the flat spot for South Carolina, and then just what's left in the tank for the Gators. It would be my thing. And this is the time of year, like mid-season, where teams are like exhausted in certain situations.
Sure.
And I just wonder, and look, I've never been like chugging the Kool-Aid of the SEC out here at ESPN as we get mocked for, but I do think there's something to be said if you play three like tough opponents, physical opponents in a row, that's a tough ask, regardless of the conference. Like even USC having to go Washington and Notre Dame, and now you know, I'm a little worried about what's left in the tank. That's why I think it's important to be at home here. I know what you mean. I love the quarterback whisperer thing. I'm intrigued. But I felt the South Carolina team is more competent than people realize. Like, I was shocked at the number. Obviously, it came down to 21-ish. But I think South Carolina, I mean, they got players, right? And they showed that against Bama.
They hung a lot against Alabama.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of that game, they're pulling out everything they could. Muschamp was doing fake field goals that didn't count for mysterious reasons when they scored touchdowns off of them. But yeah, the Alabama game, they played really close as well. So you have to give them credit. that's why I think it's kind of a weird contrarian road favorite, which normally isn't a thing.
Yeah, like I'm not sure South Carolina is like that much worse than Georgia, just in general. I mean, that line probably should have been 14.
No, that's too low. I would bet Georgia minus 14 if they played next week.
Yeah, but I mean, look, the team did lose at Missouri, so maybe I'm wrong here. But
they turned it over four times. I think they outgained South Carolina by like 280 yards or something. But Fromm threw three picks. He throws like three picks his whole life.
That's true. I don't know. Maybe I've just seen some.
It was a fluky-ish game still.
South Carolina strikes me as a team that has players. I don't know. Maybe I've just seen them at their best.
They do.
I would have to stay away from this Florida-South Carolina game.
I might be on Florida. We'll see what happens.
One game I like, and it feels like it's too good to be true, so it's probably going to lose, but it is the under in this Oregon-Washington game, and the number's 51. I've been on Oregon a couple unders lately. They've actually gone under five straight games, and it's kind of funny because we're just trained over the years to think Chip Kelly and Oregon Ducks, high-scoring games, shootouts because they're bad defense, but do you know where they rank in yards per play allowed this year?
Oh, they're top. It was like fourth or sixth. I don't remember after last game, but going into last week, they were top 10 for sure.
Yeah, they're third, which is just insane. Like, we're talking Wisconsin, we're talking Ohio State, and Oregon. Now, again, quality of opponents is like a huge thing, but it's worth mentioning. And I think just Cristobal has kind of changed. It reminds me when the Warriors wanted to go to like sort of a defensive mindset under Mark Jackson. You get trained a certain way, you just can't think it's possible, but it does like make sense. And then here's Washington, who's kind of limited offensively. We touched on it a little bit ago when we were discussing Arizona. This Huskies team was inept at the farm against Stanford. And while Easton's pretty good, they don't have a ton of playmakers. I like their backfield. But both teams, just watching both teams, especially Oregon, which is kind of more eye-opening, is they are comfortable in sort of punt-fest field position battles, taking 3 points instead of seven. They do play with pace. There is definitely a tempo there with Herbert. But with that being said, like I think this could definitely be in the high teens, low 20s.
So my projection's a little bit higher, but it's not enough for me to bet over either. I'm like closer to 52. Now, Oregon's strength of schedule, I don't have it in front of me. I'm sorry. It's not very good. So I think while they're third in defensive efficiency or probably yards per play, because they were able to just trounce Colorado and held them to whatever the 3 points total. So they jumped up wherever they were before that, fourth or sixth. So they're top three defense, but then you adjust their strength of schedule. I'm not sure they're even top 15, but they're still good. I'll give you that. They're a different mindset or outlook or different than the Chip Kelly Oregon teams, which people try to reflect on or think about. And I will say that I've thought until this last week that they played a Colorado team that hasn't been very good, but their offense has had kind of something has just been missing. With Justin Herbert, I know he's going to probably be good in the NFL down the road, but they hadn't been very crisp, and they hadn't been finishing drives, and they hadn't been as explosive as I would have anticipated. And so I think that benefits you. I'm not sure. I don't have anything in the game. Again, my number is right at 52. So it has come down to 50.5 some spots, so you maybe are on the right side. It opened 49.5, though, so it bounced up. Now it's kind of bouncing back. I think it's probably just right about correct, and I wouldn't touch it. If anything, you maybe would be better off looking at first half.
It's funny. I have both written down here, first half.
Yeah. I maybe split up the variance, bet, half of a bet on first half, half on the full game, just because, this turns into a one team getting out to a bigger lead that's going to open up. Or it could be like Oklahoma, Texas last week where no one was scoring early on because of some turnovers and stuff. It was 7-3 late in the first half. And then, once Texas goes down two scores, it opens up and there's 50 points in the second half. So that won't be to that extent, but first half's going to play slower and kind of teams feeling each other out until one of the teams pulls away.
Yeah, I'm actually leaning first half, and I tend to like that in all games because I feel like, to your point, the game script changes once we get sort of past a certain point of a margin of victory or margin of scoring margin during the game. But I'll say this. I was on Oregon Cal under a couple weeks ago when it was 46. And that was with Modster. Mm-hmm. So I feel like the value's kind of gone on the Oregon unders, given that this is Washington and it's 51.
Fair, and it's only like 4 points higher, yeah.
So that's a little concerning. But, yeah, I was looking at first half too. So that's it for me. I was looking at Houston. looking at West Virginia and looking at Mississippi State. But of those, I may go Houston. I'm probably passing on the others. What about you? Anything else before we get into hoops? Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I did have an Oregon question for you.
Yeah, go.
What would it take for you to bet the Ducks to win it all?
I can tell you. Just give me like 20 seconds.
Yeah, because they have pretty ridiculous odds, I think. Because I think with Georgia losing, I think Oregon, if they win out, is going to the playoff. And I know we dismissed the Pac-12.
So here's what does Georgia losing have anything to do with the national playoff?
Well, just
if
like
Georgia wins out, they were going to have to beat Alabama or LSU in the SEC title game anyway to get to the playoff. Which if they win out from here, they're still in the playoff.
Right, but if they had lost in the SEC championship, they would have been able to try to make a case for like the losing team there.
Yeah, but that didn't work last year. And there's, Ohio State now is going to be in the mix. Oklahoma will be in the mix. Maybe Oregon will be in the mix. I'm not sure that's 100% true. But I took 18-1 yesterday on Georgia. I just think it's a crazy number. So, anyways, since you brought them up, I was just throwing that out there. So they play this Washington game, Oregon does, and then they'll have USC on the road and Arizona State on the road. And I'm looking, and my guess is that I would need something 117-1 is about my break-even point. I still think they're less than 1% to win.
Really? Because they're at 100-1.
Even if they get in, they have to win the Pac-12 title game for one. They'd have to beat Utah most likely, which is going to be a close game. Then they still have to be huge underdogs against whoever it is at the powerhouses, Ohio State, Clemson still potentially, Alabama, whatever. So, it would still be a high number. They're probably, 40-50-1 in the market? I haven't even looked.
It's 100-1 right now.
Okay. Well, that's closer to probably, true line value. If you think they're better than that or have a better shot to win the table, then it's not a bad number.
Well, the key is they need, OU or Ohio State to lose.
Yeah, if they're comparing undefeated seasons, then Oregon will be the last team in for sure. Yeah.
Right.
Notre Dame will be in the mix.
Clemson, Bama, we're assuming Bama, but obviously things change. And then it would be two of the other three Power Fives. Ohio State maybe loses to Michigan, maybe loses to Wisconsin. And then Wisconsin may have to lose. They might need some help. Maybe Oklahoma losing the Big 12 title game to Texas or someone else. There is some help needed, but you're also 100-1. And Oregon's got a pretty good path ahead of them. They have to obviously win at Washington. And then after that, I'm not a big believer in ASU, so that game in Tempe is a little tricky, I guess. But I think they could win out. I think they're
favorite. USC is going to be tough.
At USC,
yeah. And then Utah in the Pac-12 title game is going to be tough.
We're talking 100-1 is my point. So
yeah, it's better than I would have thought the market was at without having looked, as you guys heard. I thought maybe 40-50 was the market number. 100-1 is closer to probably fair line.
Gotcha. All right, you had said you had one game, and then we'll go to some hoops.
No, I didn't. We're good. We talked about Florida, South Carolina. I was just going to comment on your Clayton Tune is playing for Houston. If people wanted to hear an update there, they're playing Connecticut. I know you were thinking about betting Houston. You were thinking about betting Mississippi State. They're a disaster, man. Tennessee should have won by way more than they did. The end zone interceptions. Mississippi State gets crushed by an Auburn team that couldn't get a first down against Florida that gave up 11 yards per play to LSU. Mississippi State gave up 59 to them. They lost to Kansas State, who hasn't won since, at home. LSU, I know the spot says this and that. I'm waiting for this number to just maybe potentially hit 17. The Tigers are going to absolutely roll, in my opinion. So I actually like the other side there.
Yeah, no, and that got me off it. I talked to someone who really knows. He's like, look, they've scored 26 points, I think is the number, the last two games against Mississippi State. So I think there's a little incentive to kind of not have a flat spot and kind of get right here.
They're rough. They got things to figure out over there.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk a little NBA. So Preston coming back momentarily.
Money won is twice as sweet as money earned.
And that's almost found money at the end of the season when you bet some futures in the NBA because you got to wait about 7 months to cash them. But it is found money in your account or tickets in the safe or whatever you want to describe it. But it is fun to talk futures here. And Preston back with me. Are you ready for this NBA season? Because it's been about 10 years since we've had a favorite this high. I mean, remember, we went through the Golden State Warriors era. We went through the LeBron with the Heat era. The Cavs were favorites that first year. They ended up losing to the Warriors in the playoffs. So we've seen kind of a predictable season upon us, but now it's wide open with parity, and the odds certainly suggest that with the Lakers as the favorites at 3-1, 350, depending on the shop. But the, you know, like last year we had odds on favorites. So it's exciting. And, you know, are you ready for it, Preston?
I am always ready for the NBA. So people maybe don't even realize, because my best ROI, and I've tweeted about it for years, is college football. And people think I'm just like a college football guy. Like, NBA is far and away my favorite league as a fan to follow, to watch. I watch a lot of NBA basketball. Like, almost every weeknight, I'm following games. Yeah, to ask me if I'm ready. Like, I am always ready. Podcasts I listen to are almost always centered around NBA. I try to gather as much information as I can, but just as like a fanboy, I'm a big fan of the association. So I'm absolutely ready to bet some futures I've already bet, some new ones that I actually grabbed this week or will be grabbing. And then, obviously the game-to-game, week-to-week stuff.
Yeah, I'm excited too. And we'll get into the futures as well. It is probably my favorite sport as well. It's just tough. I love college football so much too, but those two. But, you know, just growing up in L.A., Showtime era, and in terms of when I first started here, my competitive advantage, for lack of a better word, is NBA. That sort of separated me from others, just because not everyone loved the NBA like I did. So I was able to just sort of do a lot of our NBA coverage, and I love it. And
nice.
I was talking about this with someone last night. It is interesting that there are going to be some kind of new trends to watch. Not like, oh, this team's gone over in five of the last six, but like things you know, you and I have become accustomed and trained to sniff out, whether it be the Warriors' third quarter runs or second half kind of rollovers or whatever. So much of that is gone because there's so much change. So we're going to have to kind of learn the new habits of teams with a lot of these teams. And it's going to be kind of fun to be the first one to that habit slash trend.
Yeah, we'll have to try to sniff them out. Like you said, one of the things that I've done a lot of is betting basketball in-game. I think there's a big edge there still. And a lot of what I'm doing is rotation-based, where the in-game algorithm spitting out a line for you play-to-play is just based on the current score, how much time's left, what the closing line was before the game tipped off. But if you're able to, or if some guy just gets in foul trouble, right, you can, like, jump in and try to snag something, which they'll adjust to, like, an injury eventually or foul trouble. But rotationally, there's certain lineups for certain teams that just perform way better or way worse without certain guys or with certain guys. And there's a lot of under-the-radar guys that aren't even, you know, like, just blatant stars where there's advantages to be had, but now a lot of these guys are on different teams. So for sure will be some learning period or data gathering the first month of the season, probably before I start really hammering out in-game.
That makes sense. And sometimes we may see old habits return. For example, yesterday all these Celtics were out, right? They didn't even bring Marcus Smart, Kemba, Tatum,
Brown. They might trade all of them and just start Carson Edwards' MVP campaign.
And I was like, oh, then the automatic play is Cleveland here. I mean, I was like, wait a minute, it's Cleveland, first of all. But second of all, Brad Stevens is just a magician when he has hungry role players and doesn't have to deal with egos like Kyrie. So I was reminded yesterday of what Brad Stevens can do, because they were winning even before Carson Edwards went off in the third quarter. They were up double digits at halftime. And granted, it's the Cavs, but this is a Cavs team that started Kevin Love and started Osman and started Sexton. So they were actually playing, and they were down 11 at half. But my thing is, I was reminded what Brad Stevens can do in terms of overachieving with a roster. And when you get rid of a guy like Kyrie, I was like, all right, huh, this is interesting. And makes you, and it goes into one of your futures. You like the Sixers to win the division, the Atlantic. I don't as much because I'm worried about Embiid's health, load management, and then Brad Stevens with the Celtics. So I was just, it was a transition, but sometimes we may be revisiting old habits and old trends that we may have forgotten about. And that, to me, is Brad Stevens with a non-Kyrie roster.
They go, I think until last season, had gone over their season win total every year under Brad Stevens. So that's something worth noting. I haven't bet their season win total over or under, and I do love the 76ers this season. But, they absolutely, Kemba Walker, I think, is a different mentality than what Kyrie brings to the table. And I think the players, the younger guys, also have had time to reflect on what happened last season. And, like, Jaylen Brown's just got to be more open to coming off the bench if that's what it means to the team. Maybe he wasn't as open last year, and now he's more open to that idea. Or Gordon Hayward, or whoever it ends up being. Marcus Smart will probably be coming off of the bench. They have a lot of options and stuff. I think they definitely will figure it out and be better than last year's team.
Yeah, so their win total is 49, 49.5. So you mentioned you made some plays this week, because a lot of the plays you probably made and myself are gone. So let's talk about plays you've made this week. What has jumped out to you? Because I know we were both on the Nets under 47. That's come down to 43. I actually, and even 42.5. I like them to miss the playoffs, plus 2 and change. What plays do you think are still on the board that you like?
Yeah, you can still get. So I bet them to miss the playoffs. I think plus 280, you can still get like 255, 245 range, which I think is still a great bet for the Nets. But yeah, 43 and versus 47 is a pretty big discrepancy. I wouldn't bet under 43 anymore. I'd still lean that direction, but probably pass that number. I will say, so this is, we're starting with a weird one, but this is the one that stood out the most to me. So I was going through all the numbers. We're getting ready to write our NBA preview over at Chuck. DraftKings has this prop on. And so Ben Simmons made a three-pointer the other day in a preseason game against the international team. And all of a sudden they put up this prop. His three-pointers attempted is 65.5, over under 65.5, and his three-pointers made is over under 16.5. The last 2 years that he's played in 160 games total in the regular season, he's attempted 17 three-pointers, and he's made zero. Now, he made one in a preseason game, an international game. At the end of, like, a half, he just threw one up from, like, 28 feet. So all of a sudden, now people think Ben Simmons is going to be shooting threes, let alone shooting them, but also making them. These are just way too high. If you are able to bet at DraftKings, they're minus 177, both of them, to the under. I know someone that did bet them. They're now minus 215 to the under. Still ridiculously free money, in my opinion. That was the thing that stood out the most. Is they're trying to capitalize on the Ben Simmons hitting a three thing. They took more, as far as limits are concerned, than I would have imagined or guessed. So, yeah, if you're with me, I mean, I just don't see Ben Simmons. Even if he does, say, take one a game, he's not going to make 17 threes. He's 0 for 17 in his life. He hasn't figured out how to shoot three. I don't even think he's going to be shooting one a game anyways. They're not going to need him to. You know, maybe in the playoffs they'll need to start opening up, spreading the floor, trying to take some shots. I don't know. They got to figure things out, but he's not going to be shooting as many threes. So I love the unders on those.
We've seen some players all of a sudden become three-point shooters. I mean, look, Nene was even making threes a little bit ago for the Rockets. Are you worried at all that this guy has sort of kind of practiced and will be an occasional shooter from three?
I don't think so. Even in the preseason, he hasn't really attempted many either. I know Brown, the coach, has said that he's going to probably put him in the corner more rather than on the block. Maybe he'll catch some passes where he's open in the corner. I still think his first instinct is going to be to drive the ball, though, once he catches a pass and no one's in front of him. So, I'm fine betting these. It's just, sure, it could happen. He could shoot 1-3 a game. It goes over. Here's the other thing. Like, he can get injured and not play 80 games. Like, I mean, that's also possible. I mean, there's a lot of things that can go right your way, betting unders on props. And this is one that's just
right.
Too much hype on him making one in a preseason game.
All right. That was a random play. And you're not crazy because they all tickets cash the same, as we like to say. But I guess we should expand on the Nets thing. We just gave it away and we kind of dismissed it because we've talked about it on the podcast before in the spring, or excuse me, the summer. But basically, it's to me, this is like a team that is kind of punting on the season. Kevin Durant, I'm anticipating his not coming back. Kyrie maybe focusing on his brand and all the nonsense that comes with that now that he's in the Big Apple. And I just think like so many things went right for them last year. They also lost a lot of talent with D'Angelo Russell being one of them. I don't know. Like, get plus 250 for them to miss the playoffs. Under 47 obviously was a play. Now it's not at 43, 42.5. So, I mean, that's sort of my thought process. Why do you like the fade the Nets this year?
Yeah, it's a lot of the same stuff. You know, we were giving out that stat. I don't have it in front of me. Of all of the guys that were positive net ratings for the Nets last year on the court versus off are all no longer Nets players. And all the guys that were negative net ratings, LeVert even, Dinwiddie even, Joe Harris, there's Jared Allen, they're still on the Nets. Now they added Kyrie and DeAndre Jordan, and then Durant won't be playing. And they added one more guy. Was it from the Hawks? Did they make a trade? I feel like then they added one more wing player that can make a positive difference. But overall, yeah, they're not a 48-win team this year. Plus, Kyrie had re-injured his facial structure and fracture or something or other. I don't know if he's going to miss a ton of time, but his career is averaging 63 games played per year. He always misses about 25% of the season. But that leads me to my one positive note that I made here. Only offered at FanDuel, but sixth man of the year. It's basically Lou Williams versus the field, but they listed out the field as like 20 to 25 guys. Spencer Dinwiddie is plus 700. All right, last year he averaged 17 points, 4.6 assists on 44% shooting, which is basically Lou Williams' territory anyway. Lou was like 20 and 5 on 40 less. I think he shot worse, like 42 or 43%. So here's the main thing. Lou Williams, I don't think he's going to be the sixth man of the year because his role is going to change, for one, because Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are there now. Like, Lou Williams was their best player, ball handler, scorer on the team last year, and he was the guy that ran. They're not going to be doing that with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. So I was trying to figure out who's the guy, not Andrew Williams, who was plus 115, that we can figure out who's going to be the best shot. And I think it's Spencer Dinwiddie because as long as he just comes off the bench for the majority of the games he plays, that's the end of the exact ruling. So if he plays, say, 40 games where he starts, 42 where he comes off the bench, he's a qualifying sixth man of the year award winner. So Kyrie Irving is going to miss 25 games, maybe even more this year, probably more because they struggle and they're playing for Kevin Durant next season anyways. Dinwiddie's numbers are going to be really, really good, and they lost D'Angelo Russell. I mean, he's going to have to take over, a good portion of the load there. I like him quite a bit at 7-1 if you have access to FanDuel, sixth man of the year, Spencer Dinwiddie.
Yeah, and we've seen random guys win it. It doesn't have to be like a playoff team. I mean, Eric Gordon won it a couple years ago. Obviously, Lou Williams won it, but Jamal Crawford has won this thing on the Clippers when they weren't that good.
He fits that mold. He's basically Lou Williams, Jamal Crawford anyway. Right. He's just younger, and people haven't really probably paid as much attention yet.
Okay, so we would both like the Jazz. Now, the numbers come up a lot. It's annoying, but it's 53.5, certainly playable at this point. Basically, it comes down to this for me. They've added upgraded the two positions they needed to upgrade, point guard and then shooting. And they got Bogdanovich and also Mike Conley. They were perfect fits to a team that had all the makings. Now they get Donovan Mitchell some help. And I just think this team always has the home court inflation because they catch teams on these long road trips and all that. So it's not just the altitude and the actual games. It's just some teams will like rest guys in Utah and Denver because they just want to punt on those games. It's like a 5-game West Coast trip from an Eastern Conference team. So I always feel like their kind of win percentage at home is inflated, and that's why they get a little bit of a reality check in the playoffs. But with that being said, it's still a really good team. They're a contender. And I think there's always that one team that treats the regular season a little too seriously. And I think the Jazz are going to be that team this year.
Very similar, I think, to the Nuggets last year. So, look, 53.5, this is one that I still think is playable.
Yeah.
Because I think there is a lot more upside to this team. And for some of the reasons you mentioned, Snyder just having more shooting now, which is something that they haven't had. Yet I think they, scheme-wise, probably run some of the best offense in the NBA. So my projection is closer to 55 wins. So even at 53.5, and I bet 52.5. But 53.5 I still think is worth something. This team, so one thing I think that gets overlooked is the fact that, for one, I mean, Joe Ingles is probably their second best player outside of Gobert just because Mitchell was so inefficient and he's younger. And the reason I think he's so inefficient is because they basically were saying, hey, Mitchell, we need you to play point guard because Ricky Rubio, he can play point guard, but, we need guys that can also shoot threes. Mitchell, you can, but then he was shooting contested step backs from 28 feet. Like, Mitchell's efficiency now having Mike Conley on the floor, and they signed Bogdanovich from the Pacers who can shoot, and then Ingles either off the bench or maybe starting in some cases. His efficiency, Mitchell's going to be a much more efficient player. Maybe his numbers and volume won't be as high, but I think that's going to benefit the Jazz as a whole a lot more than people maybe realize. It's not just, hey, they added Mike Conley and Bogdanovich. It's they added those two, and now how does that make Donovan Mitchell? Because you saw in the Houston series, and I've pointed this out before on Daily Wager, 2 years ago, Joe Ingles had a game against the Rockets early in the playoff series. I think it was game one. They beat him as a double-digit dog in Houston outright, and Ingles had like 7 or 8 threes. And Houston defended him the rest of that series. They said, anybody but Joe Ingles. So they were letting Mitchell shoot his step-back threes. They were letting guys like Royce O'Neal shoot threes. Jameson Crowder was on the team. And Houston had no problem after that, and they literally were not letting Joe Ingles shoot the ball. And when that's the case, Mitchell had to try to do everything himself and just couldn't do it. I mean, he's just not that good at he's not a top player in the world. And then last year they did the same thing the entire series. They just hounded Ingles. They said everyone but Ingles because they didn't have shooting. Now they have Ingles, Mike Conley, who's one of the better shooters at a point guard position, and then they have Bogdanovich. Like, you can't just do that anymore. And they brought in Jeff Green, who's a great scorer and I think an underrated player because of Jeff Green. People remember him from, like, LeBron, Cavs teams, or maybe making mistakes in the past. But I think for the price they got him, $2.5 million a year, great. So yeah, I have very, very high upside here on this team. I think their ceiling is through the roof. They absolutely could be the one seed in the West, just because I think, you know, teams like the Clippers and Lakers maybe playing a little more load management throughout the year. Paul George and Anthony Davis are already, you know, injured to start the season. So yeah, the Jazz definitely at 53.5, I still think it's worth a bet.
Well, and that's the thing is we've sometimes you have to just get ahead of something. Just because we haven't seen it doesn't mean it won't happen. Obviously, it was comfortable to bet the Warriors over the years because we had seen it. We know it. This is a wide open canvas, completely blank canvas, and the Jazz have all the makings, and you just touched on it. And guys, like, they were running their offense through Gobert in a lot of ways. He doesn't have to do that. He can play off the ball. He doesn't have to set the high screen. I mean, he's just going to be a better offensive player, too, because he's going to be sort of a fourth option, if you will, and just complimentary and able to attack the rim and then obviously focus on defense. So I just think the Donovan Mitchell is going to benefit a ton, like you said, and this is just – and they have the core set. This is not just a completely team that's put together and first time playing. Like, they already have that core. Quinn Snyder's been there. It's just a really good, like, bet-on team, and it starts with the win total. So I'm a fan there of that. A win total I got kind of tipped off to by a couple people, and I started researching it more, and it's going to be a play in ESPN Chalk, is the Bulls season win total over. Now, there's definitely causes for concern, right? Because it's only 33.5, 34. So I'm not expecting – I don't need them to be a good team or a 500 team, but I just needed to win 35 games. They could be just injury prone, and if they are, they are. But last year, they had so many games missed by their best players, Markkanen, LaVine, Wendell Carter, and they were fielding guys that I remember saying on Daily Wager at the end of the year, like, I don't know who this guy is. I've never heard of him. And he was starting for the Bulls. So Jim Boylan gets a contract. He's reportedly smoothed out all the issues that they had last year with team meetings and whatnot. I think this is a team that could compete for a playoff spot. Now, that would only mean like 40 wins, but I'm playing over 33.5 here.
So this is why I've looked at it. It would be over if I had to. So I don't disagree. It's still like the Bulls needing to win like nearly half their games. I don't know. We start thinking about it that way. I think it's going to be kind of like them, the Pistons, maybe the Hawks if they're actually good. Good enough to make a playoff run. I don't think they are this year yet. It's going to be close. I'm passing. But I will say this. You're right about injuries last season. I believe when they traded for Otto Porter Jr., before Otto Porter Jr. actually got hurt, they were 6-2. They actually won 6 out of 8 games. Then he got hurt, and then they couldn't win anything, and then they ended up kind of just tossing the season away. They've signed really underrated analytics point guard Tomas Satoransky. I think if he's starting over Kobe White, who's the rookie at North Carolina, that's a big positive. I'm not sure what their plan is, though, or game plan is there. They also signed Thad Young, who's just a good veteran to have, who's going to be a positive impact player on both ends of the floor. So they definitely, I think, have some upside with the youth to go with Otto Porter Jr., Thad Young, Satoransky. There's something there. I think you could be right. It's probably going to be very dependent on how they start, like it is for a lot of these teams that are either in the tank for a better draft pick or pushing for a playoff spot. So I think that, you know, comes down to ultimately the first 2 months of the season, maybe 2.5. But I stayed away, but I would bet Bulls over if I had to there.
I'm glad you mentioned Thad Young. That was part of my write-up that I submitted the other day, is that it does concern me they lost Robin Lopez, but getting another veteran in Thad Young is important. And, you know, even Otto Porter was really put up some nice numbers with this team when he got acquired. So having him, Markkanen, LaVine is a pretty solid core, so to speak, again, for a team in the East that I just need to win 35 games. So that was one of my over-under plays. What about you?
A couple more props that I want to hit, and then I do think the Knicks are just going to be under the total, so I'll do that now. 28.5, it's just too high. And you can also get Knicks. I mean, a lot of people don't like laying like 700 to 900 on them not to make the playoffs, but they're not making the playoffs. It's like 1.3% to make the playoffs, maybe even less than that. I'm trying to remember. My number might have been 0.7%. I think I got the 0.3 on the wrong side. 0.7% to make the playoffs, and you can lay minus 700. It's just such a massive edge. You have to lay minus 700, though, and you have to wait for 7 months. But it's a really good return on your money. So I bet that, and I also bet the under. I think so. If they are never at any point in this season tanking, which I think is going to be the case after the All-Star break, at minimum, they're a 23-win team. So 20.5 is just way too high anyways, in my opinion. The roster just is super young, doesn't have enough that they can rely on. They signed four or five power forwards in the offseason. There's just a lot of the same, not enough good. They, I think, can ultimately win enough games. Outside of the Hornets and maybe the Cavs, I mean, the East, they're the third worst team in the East, and they might even be worse than that. We're not even sure. And, you know, RJ Barrett hasn't been very efficient. He wasn't at Duke. And at some point, they're just going to say, hey, do what you can, and let's see what we have here. It's just not going to be a team that's molded to win 29-plus games. So I think that's an under. And if you want to lay the big juice, they're not making the playoffs. So you can get a winner there, I think, ultimately, almost for free.
It's a strange team. They have some players, though, whereas in previous years they had no one.
Who's their best player?
Like, if I were building a franchise, who would I want? Or who's their most talented player this year?
Who's their best player? Not even a franchise. Because like, you have to just win games right now for a season win total. It's right. Not
the probably, season win total. Probably Julius Randle.
Yeah, he's their best player, and he's one of the worst rim protectors in the entire world. He's good.
I think Mitchell Robinson's like really rebounds, good.
And they have Mitchell Robinson there, and they also have Taj Gibson and the other five guys they signed. But if Julius Randle's your best player,
they have a bunch of dudes who should be like the first guy off the bench for a contender.
Yes, that's fair enough. But yeah, when he's your best player, probably.
But they have like seven of them. Like, that's my thing. They have like seven of them. And Nicolito.
Right, are those guys good enough to win 30 games?
Nicolito is awesome in the World Cup.
I've heard that. I watched a few of those games, so we'll see how it plans out, pans out.
But he might stink. I'll tell you, like, Kevin Knox stinks. They have some guys who stink. Like, there's no doubt. But they have, like, literally nine guys who could, like, come off the bench, first guy off the bench on a contender.
Let me ask you real quick, then, these last props that I bet that I think are worthwhile giving out. Disregarding price, I'm just going to ask you right now, who averages the most points per game this season in the NBA?
I would guess Harden, but Curry would probably be the other guy.
So why would you say Harden with Russell Westbrook going there and probably taking a ton of the volume?
I don't think he's going to take the volume. I don't think it's going to be any worse than like Chris Paul. I just think the way Harden's style and the way the Rockets' offense is, I think, and Harden's done it the last 3 years, right? Yeah. Or last 2 years he's led the league in scoring.
So, yeah, well, last year he did, but he had that streak where Chris Paul was injured, where for like 3 or 4 weeks he scored 40 to 60 a game. This is the thing. Like, people don't think Westbrook's going to take the phone. If you're in a half-court set, sure, but the thing that Westbrook does is he's so explosive in transition, and the Rockets never ran in transition. They were slowing it down and trying to grind out threes and pick and roll, and Chris Paul took some volume. Westbrook will absolutely take more volume away from Harden than Chris Paul will, because he'll get out in transition. He also attacks the rim better, can get fouled, and you know, actually finish at the rim, too. Chris Paul would maybe stop. He'd get by on a pick and roll, right, and he'd stop, and, like, he'd have a 10-footer, but he'd wait, and then he'd, like, dribble it back out again and, like, pass it back to Harden. I think this is going to be a massive drop-down. Mm-hmm. And then so the answer is Steph Curry, in my opinion. Like, clear, far and away, it's Steph. Not because he dropped 40 in 20 minutes in a preseason game the other night, but they did lose Durant. They lost Iguodala. They won't have Klay Thompson for most of the season. Their defense is going to be way worse, and they're going to have to score with teams, which is the only reason a lot of these teams are like why Harden scored 40 to 60 for that 3 to 4 week stretch, because they were having to win because they started the season so slowly. They were out of the playoff race, so he had to do that. The Warriors are going to be a spot where Steph probably has to do that a lot of nights. And the last thing, in the preseason, I know it's just preseason, but the fastest team in the NBA last year was the Atlanta Hawks. They ran 104.5 possessions per game. The Warriors, in their three games, I believe, in the preseason, maybe it's four now, are up in the, like, 112 to 113 range. I'm not sure how it adjusted after the last Lakers game and, like, all the backups played. But before that, it was 112.8. So they're playing at a, way faster pace than the fastest team in the NBA last year, which I think is intentional. They're trying to do that on purpose. I didn't get Steph, and I looked to qualify for the scoring title. And you can bet this at FanDuel. It's plus 250. Steph has the highest average points per game. To qualify, you have to play in either 70 games or score at least 1,400 points, which for Steph, if he's averaging 34, 35, is about half of the season. So if he plays half the season, he'll qualify if he gets the 1,400 points. And I think he's going to be scoring 36, 37 a game potentially. They're just going to need him to.
I like it. That was well-researched, well-presented, and hard to argue there when you're getting plus 250. And Durant's out of the league, too. I mean, that's the other guy that would you know, over the years be among the leaders in terms of points per game. Just going through last year, Paul George, obviously on a new team, different situation with Kawhi. Giannis, Embiid, and Steph still did 27 last year on that loaded Warriors team. So Can't disagree with you there. Maybe Booker could be in the mix. He was right there. Although, what do you make of the Suns? I think they're going to be like sneaky decent this year.
Yeah, I think that's what most people think. I'm not sure. I mean, they get a guy like Rubio and having a point guard to finally get Devin Booker the ball. Like, Booker has basically been playing point guard for the Suns, right. And he isn't one.
Right.
That's positive. DeAndre Ayton's a year older, right? They bring in Dario Saric. I think Aaron Baines, I love Aaron Baines. He's a great rebounder, defender. They came over from Boston, which I don't know why Boston got rid of him. They could use him. They're starting in his cancer at center. But Ty Jerome in the draft, Mikal Bridges, but they lost T.J. Warren. They got Javon Carter. They still have like a bunch of young
Ayton
guys.
Another year.
Kelly Oubre Jr. is the other guy that maybe can make an impact. But
and
I
Ayton,
feel like
the I think Ayton anything. makes the, you know. I mean, remember, this is a team that was, what, like a 20-point underdog to Golden State? I mean, this team was, like, really bad at times last year. I think they're going to be pretty decent.
What's their number for wins?
Well, that's different.
29? I
mean, yeah, it's 29, 29 and a half. That's different. Winning games is different, but I think covering and winning a lot of games in the second half, that kind of stuff, I think they could be a sneaky decent team.
Without accounting for tanking, I have them winning 31.3 games, so I would bet over, but I am going to be shocked if they're in the playoff race at the All-Star break, and they will be tanking after the All-Star break. So I think it's a pass.
And I'm on the Rockets, too. Rockets are, what was it, minus 275? 280?
Yeah.
Look, I mean, there's competitiveness in that division, but I think it's all at the second tier. So in their division with the, I'm just like getting it up. So they have Dallas, New Orleans, and San Antonio. So that's the other sort of tier, but I think they're all like a cut below. And that's why I think that's worth a play at Houston, because I think this is an upgrade with getting Westbrook in.
Yeah, I think for sure it is. I had some value there. I would bet Rockets. I believe like the break-even price at minus 278 at DraftKings is 73.6%, and I'm like closer to 79%. So it's like over 5% edge. And yeah, unless the Spurs do something crazy or both Harden and Westbrook got hurt for a really long portion of the season, I mean, that's essentially what you're betting up against. And I still don't see the Spurs being in that range where they're, you know, people forget just 2 years ago, Mike D'Antoni won with the Rockets team, like 63 games. They started so slow last year. They were below 500, like a quarter of the season in. They're out of the playoff race, and they still got to winning the division anyways at 53 wins, I believe. So, like, this team, I think, if they're just set from the get-go, Westbrook or not, like, they're just a better team, I think people realize, because they started so poorly and played so poorly for about a quarter of last season.
Yeah, and 2 years ago, they went like 5 months or whatever it was without losing back-to-back games. And when you have the three-pointer and you lead the league in three-point attempts and makes, just over like the 82-game season, you're like going to like win out. It's just they have such a perfect situation for the regular season. So I'm a fan there. Any final play there, because we got to wrap things up?
No, man, we can wrap it up. I know it's a long podcast, so thanks for people that stuck it out. A lot of college football, a lot of NBA, but excited for the season to get going.
Who's your champ, regardless of odds?
Regardless of odds. Oh, I actually think the Rockets are my favorite to win. Let me double check. Yeah, I have the Rockets a little bit higher than the Clippers and Lakers in the West, and then Bucks and Sixers are the two out of the East. It's like, unless the trade happens for the Celtics, it's one of those two. But right now, if I just had to pick the winner, it's the Rockets. And they were really, I mean, people maybe already forget too, like they were really close in two postseasons the last 2 years against the Warriors, especially the one 2 years ago. They have, if Westbrook, high variance approach to him, bringing him in, if he's an upgrade over Chris Paul, which he potentially could be, it's two of the last three MVPs are on the same team now, and you surround them with shooters. Yeah, I think it's the Rockets. I think they have the best shot at making it happen and finally getting one.
I'd like to see it for D'Antoni. For me, my play would be like the Lakers, and I'm not a homer. I keep thinking they're not going to win, but I just don't see how a team beats them 4 out of 7 with Davis and LeBron. It's really hard to visualize. I just think they're going to be so good.
I hope he's healthy. You know, I'm a Laker fan, too. Right. I'm maybe just more bearish in general because of all the other pieces outside of LeBron and Davis. But the Rockets are in a similar boat, too. They don't have a ton of assets. But I think like Eric Gordon, Clint Capella, those mid-tier guys are still better than, you know, what the Lakers can bring to the table, maybe outside of Danny Green. So, yeah, we'll see how that plays out. But for the price, yeah, Sixers and Rockets are still, I think, pretty good bets at 9-1 range.
Gotcha. All right, my man, great stuff. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you soon on Daily Wager,
yep.
if not before that here on the pod.
Sounds good. Take care.
Baby needs a new pair of shoes. Come on.
Okay, thanks to Preston Johnson for all of his time and insight and analysis and math as well. His model is always a nice thing to rely on when in these discussions, both for hoops and for college football. So hope you all enjoyed sort of a different twist this year. Mr. Executive Director will return Thursday for the NFL podcast, and maybe I'll get him to offer some of his college plays as well, as we were unable to get those. But congrats to him and his Nationals, as bitter as I still am. And obviously thanks to Preston for all the his work here behind the scenes prepping for this podcast. So it was really insightful. Good luck to everyone this weekend and also the upcoming NBA season.